Starting a broadcast again. Could you say something, Mariana?
I can say something and then they're going to tell us if they can hear us and we just start again.
It kind of looks as if your voice is coming through looking at the levels here. Yeah. I hope somebody's still listening and they haven't all gone away.
I'll just
try and get a wee feedback loop going on. And you talk. Oh, good now. That's good. Thank you.
All good. Ian said you can
thank
hear
you.
It.
Well, I guess we...
we start again. We rewind.
Yeah. I think I'll patch in the introduction later. we'll just do a brief summary of what we're talking about. I'm hoping people heard the Binky audio. Maybe we can run that for them. But as usual, this is Loose Learners. I'm John Johnson, and with me is Mariana Finnis, who hopefully now is audible. We're
Yay!
Both teachers.
Hello, everybody!
We're both teachers, one primary, one higher education, and we're talking about everything to do with the internet and education. We're on EduTalk on the first Wednesday of each month at 8 p.m. UK time. The next episode will be on September the 6th, since we seem to be taking August off. And we had started talking, and you may have heard me, a wee bit about Binky. And this is I'll just play the description of Binky here from the YouTube video which describes it. I think. Yeah.
I'm on my phone all the time.
Sometimes I'm doing Facebook and Twitter.
Or I can't deal with more posts about you know who.
I don't actually want to see more photos of my friends' kids.
Come on.
It's true, but my thumb wants to go like this, so I'm literally forced to open Facebook.
When you want to use your phone just to use your phone, you want Binky.
Binky?
Binky. A never-ending list of random stuff for when your thumbs get the munchies.
Cauliflower, Diana Ross.
Swiss cheese. Puddles.
Polka dot. Skateboard. Ivan Pavlov.
Like.
Does that, like, do anything?
Nope. It's all fake. You can also swipe left or swipe right. Not that it matters.
Ew. Mustard. Hard pass.
I swiped right on the Bee Gees. No one needs to know.
Enjoy the freedom of a social media app where nothing does anything and nothing means anything.
What if I want to comment on something? It's always so stressful to think of what to say.
Binky makes commenting easy. It randomly chooses from over 17 pre-written comments like, OMG, I love this so much, or this, so much this. You want the thrill of looking at a new thing every second. Binky gives you that in its purest form.
Tandoori chicken, Shuzor.
Grateful Dead, nice!
Mayonnaise, Denver Broncos? This is really dumb.
It's stupid. It's awesome. It's Binky.
I think that's the end of the Binky awesomeness.
And they heard it twice, so I said, bear with, we're playing it again.
Yeah, and of course we'll remove all trace of any mistakes from the podcast.
Wonderful. So what does Binky do? So what were we saying about Binky? Let's start with Binky. It does nothing, but it does something.
Yeah.
It helps us learn about our habits. And I guess we started talking about the Atlantic article and how we came across it through that.
Yeah. So the app basically does nothing. And I think the idea, it's very like Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat or one of these things where you just get a continuous scroll of posts. And Binky mostly seems to consist of photographs with short descriptions. And you can like those. You can re-blink them, which does nothing. You can swipe one way or the other to say they're good or bad or whatever.
What I was saying that the guy who wrote it, his name is Dan Kurtz, and he said he got the idea for the app after reading his updates on Facebook and Twitter while waiting for the train, he says. So I'm quoting this from the Atlantic article. He said that he doesn't even want that level of cognitive engagement with anything sometimes. And so but he feels that he ought to be looking at his phone like it is his default state of being. And so he wondered what it would look like to boil down these services into the sort of purest, most content-free form. And so the idea being then that you keep all the gestures, but you don't have any of the kind of social connections or the kind of going out there in the way that most social media apps have. So it enables you to look like you're using the phone, to look at pretty pictures, to do all of the things that you would do, and but without any kind of cognitive engagement, without any meaning or significance. And the big point, I think, that the article in The Atlantic was making was that in spite of it being an app that does nothing, it's actually, the guy who wrote the article says, found it, quite satisfying to just, to just go through the process. I also don't think it's irrelevant that the guy who designed it is an improvisational actor. So my sense is that, he was trying to showcase something about our habitual use of the phone when it isn't always about communication, about gathering information, but sometimes it's just a distraction, like you might play a game.
So I wonder, I found I couldn't really look at it for very long, and partly because I felt slightly foolish, but I'm wondering if it's a game type thing, because I don't play games on my phone at all. In the early days of smartphones, I think I had Tetris and I played it a couple of dozen times, and I very occasionally looked at other games, but I don't usually play games. Read.
I don't think that it's intended as something that you even would use over any period of time. I may be wrong. I mean, I guess we'd have to have the guy who created it to say that. But my sense is that it's more a kind of, an artistic statement than it is anything that anybody would expect anyone to use. And the whole thing about, it having the baby pacifier, which you said it's a dummy here. I've never used the word, so I didn't know. And the fact that it's got that as its logo, it's kind of, it's kind of speaking to that thing of, what we use sometimes instead of something else. So, you use a baby dummy to pacify your baby when it's crying, when mum is too busy to hug it or something, And so there is that implication that what it can be used for, or what it's demonstrating, is how we often use our phone in that kind of way, like a dummy, or like a cigarette. Or like the doggy that replaces your your kid and that kind of thing. I think in one of his articles he talks about the smartphone being like somebody's chihuahua, like you take your chihuahua everywhere kind of thing, or the cigarette. And all of those things are connecting back to something that stands for something else in a habitual way, to me. At least, and so therefore, my sense is that what the app is trying to do is to show us how reliant we are, and how we can even get some kind of reward, even out of something that isn't actually connecting us with anybody else. As a reflective thing, I would say, as a reflective piece, more than something you would use
to bring it back a wee bit towards teaching and learning. One of the things that I'm sure is every primary school teacher in the country is very aware of is the fidget spinner. The guy in the article mentions that, this is almost what it's like. It's like a fidget spinner, which has been used as, all sorts of things in the classroom. And lots of kids are coming into school with fidget spinners, and lots of people on Twitter have been writing things about how you can use them to encourage learning. And I've generally found them to be reasonably annoying things that don't really seem to help, in my experience, children to concentrate on what they're meant to be doing, but it does help them be very quiet and concentrate on spinning their fidget spinner. So I don't know if there's anything to be learned about that.
Well, I guess that it is about, you know, our habitual actions and how we become almost unaware of how repetitive action creates habit.
Mm.
And that really, whatever the content, when we are using our smartphones, all that we're doing is what Binky shows you.
Mm.
You know, you scroll, you like, you comment, you swipe right, you swipe left if you use the particular apps that do that. You comment and you scroll and you know. And actually, what I think the useful thing from a pedagogical point of view is, you know, to what extent do we become dependent on just that in terms as a way of getting us to feel engaged with the technology. And I guess that's possibly something that we would want to address as educators in the same way as you might your spinner, I guess. You know, it is getting you focused, it is getting you paying attention, but is it really getting you paying attention to the kind of things that you would want to be paying attention to?
Mm-hmm.
That's really, I guess, you know, the larger question. But sometimes, and I think the point that he was making, you know, when he created the app, sometimes all that you have is that sense of you should be on the phone because it's what we do. But really, you couldn't care less what Mary or John might be doing. You just kind of, you know, you just scroll because it sort of makes you feel better, like having a cigarette, you know. And then it comes in. You know, what comes in there is all the stuff that happens when you use, I guess, the sort of addictive behavior. Yeah, when you're using something to meet a need. An unmet need that actually isn't being met by the thing. So the scrolling and the liking and the commenting isn't giving you, I guess, might make you get the illusion that you're getting connection, but are you? I guess it's the larger question, isn't it?
Well, I mean, we were talking a wee while ago about, you know, the idea of Twitter and these things being sort of, what was it? The addictive nature is due to the expectation of a response.
Mm-hmm.
And this has removed that, so...
Well, it doesn't have that variable reward, that's what you're thinking of. It doesn't have the variable reward, and yet, I guess what it does do, it allows us to exercise the habit, the movement, and that there is something in that, in terms of the thing. The thing that I thought was really interesting about it was, you know, how we often talk about how algorithms kind of embed bias in software because we are not aware of our cognitive biases. And because this is such a stark kind of app, i.e. it's not doing anything, so you really are focused when you're using it. I actually quite enjoyed using it because it really gets you focused on the whole process of engaging with these platforms. I was fascinated. You know, it's a very simple example and one that is non-controversial. If you think about, you know, I don't know if you went as far as doing that, but when, you know, the swiping left and swiping right.
Mm-hmm.
And is swiping left good or bad?
Oh, I can't remember, but that's
yes,
a...
Yes,
I would say left would be bad.
Ah, of course you would.
Because I'm left-handed.
You know how the whole way in which left is kind of always portrayed in, you know, way back from, you know, all the way to, you know, when you think about Latin and in Italian, you know, the meaning of, you know, lefty is sinister and things like that, right? So, but I think it's really fascinating, right, that it's embedded, you know, that sort of bias is embedded in the way that, so he had to make a decision, right? Is left bad or good? And is right, you know, it's right, good or bad, right? And he made the decision. And then I think it's a very simple and nice example about how we embed our cultural biases into the platforms we design. I thought it was lovely. And actually the icons that he's created for good and bad are really lovely. They really are wonderful. Very worth looking at the app just for them, because they keep changing as well, and he's got a big variety. But there is the consistency of left is bad and right is good, which made me smile. As a left-hander too, of course, I should say.
we're all sinister on this podcast.
We have gremlins.
So today, I think, there's some sinister goings on.
It must be that, because you and I are left-handed and we are mocking left-handedness.
Yeah, it's on Skype tonight. It just quit right out up from under us. Anyway, one of the things I thought might be worth mentioning is that there's actually a couple of apps which do something similar that you can get, and I don't think we've got either of these, because one of them is on Android only, and the other is $14.99, so it seemed quite expensive. But there's this one that's called Mistaken, and what it does is allows you to take a picture, submit it, and never see it again. In exchange, you get a stranger's picture that they will never see again. So I guess this is not quite the same thing, because it's pushing towards just, I suppose, providing something interesting. And you can then, when you see somebody else's photograph, you can share that on. You don't share your own photographs on, but you can share other people's photographs on via Twitter or an email or Instagram or whatever.
But you're not able to comment on them, so you are not able to say, "Oh, that was a great picture that you sent." Right? Is that that's right?
Yeah, okay. I think so. And again, the person that's reviewing this for the next web sees this as a way of killing time, which is sort of the same sort of thing, and we seem to definitely be that way inclined. Now we've got these phones in our hands, we use them to kill time, to fill our time, to stop whatever else is happening, to take time out or whatever. So that seems quite interesting.
The idea of the photo, it's interesting. I was reflecting on that, and I was thinking about, you know, you take a photo, you send it on, you get a stranger's photo, so that what you are taking away from that is the social interaction. So you and I do not talk, even though you might have got my photo and I might have got yours, but the photo can travel on without commentary. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because again, what it's doing is it's focused on minimizing cognitive load on the part of the user. So there isn't even the effort of, you know, you're removing the idea of a variable reward, because actually nobody will like anything that you send. So it's interesting that, you know, I don't know that three apps make a trend, but I wonder whether there is a trend to, you know, to doing that, and what the impact of that might be. The sort of where you don't, so you're taking meaning out of the platform to such an extent that now it doesn't even have the illusion of interaction. I think that's an interesting thing to reflect on.
But the other end of that is you're getting some serendipitous photographs. It also says in the app, your photo will be shown to as few people as possible. So, you know, I presume that it depends on how many people are on and using the app and things like that, but that seems interesting. And one of the bloke who's reviewing this here said what he did see was some really nice photographs sometimes, He saw some that were not that interesting, but and he mentions the fact that he's worried about, you know, sort of not safe for work stuff appearing, but it doesn't seem to have seen any. And he's just saying that, you know, he did see some interesting photographs, but you're also seeing interesting photographs, I guess, that are exclusive, because, you know, not many other people have seen those because they're sent to as few people as possible, which is interesting, I think.
It is also, of course, that, you know, you could get anything. So in the spirit of, you know, is it good or bad? Yes, right? You could get wonderful things that people decide to say, well, I'd like to share this out in the world, and I don't know where it's going to go, but, you know, here it is. This is something, you know, a beautiful sunrise. But equally, it could be something not quite as beautiful, because effectively you could send in anything. And humans will do that.
we hope so. I'm always kind of quite interested in the sort of random type things as well. I find it quite fascinating. But the other app is this Minutiae, I think. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Yeah, Minutiae app, which is along the same sort of lines, except it's a what is called an antisocial media app. And you get this app and once a day you get an alert and you take a photograph, whatever's in front of you there and then, and you explore the moment of one random stranger at the same time, and the idea is it goes on for 1,440 days, so that you've captured every minute in 24 hours. Now, I'm not sure if that means it wakes you up at night. I don't think I would like that. No,
you can set it to do not disturb. But the main thing is, of course, that you don't know when you're going to get the alert to take the photograph, so you don't have a chance to compose it or to make something beautiful. It could be nothing.
Yeah, I'm quite attracted by that idea. And it's anonymous. Mm-hmm. No profiles, no likes, no comments.
Yep.
And that's kind of what it does.
But again, isn't it? That's one that could be a beautiful thing, in that it could give you insight into cultures across the world, and it could give you, you know, the kind of everyday moments in people's lives, which could be a wonderful thing. And because of the anonymity, because of all of those things, then it could also bring you things that are not suitable for children, and also pretty boring things, I guess. There's a sort of randomness, and one of the ways in which they sell it is this thing about the in between moments, you know, the sort of moments that are in between the sort of things that you would post on social media. I thought that was interesting, because I was, you know, I was thinking from there is, I don't know if you know, there is this guy called Edward Hopper. He does some lovely paintings.
Oh, the painter, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of his paintings are of these things of that are kind of the way I've heard him talk. You know, when I've been reading about him, is this in between moments. You know, when people are in between things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me a little bit, the idea of this app reminded me a little bit of that. If you are going to overlay a kind of artistic kind of notion to it. But of course, the other uglier thing is, you know, are we now not only performing our life for Instagram, so that we do the best shot for our food or all of these things, but also commoditizing the moments in between where actually we can just, you know, chill, and then the alarm goes and you have to take your photographs. And of course, it takes me all the way into the circle, the novel, but that's probably another story.
Well, also, I guess Edward Hopper, one of the things, as far as I understand him, is the pictures are just very, very carefully composed. You know, and things are framed in a really, with a lot of detail, and this is not that. But that's probably
bad. The only similarity I was seeing was the kind of in between thing. So it's no big. There are, you know, in his paintings, there are no big events. They really are just kind of, you know, there are people waiting, all about to do this, about to do that. And that reminded me that this sort of in between of this minutiae up sounded a bit like that. That you would take the moments in between, you know, events. And as I say, you know, I don't know whether it's a good or a bad thing. I guess depends on. On which side of the bed one gets up.
I thought this was quite a nice idea, and then I saw it was $14.99, which seems a lot for an app. But it also, they're offering the chance for 100 people to get a book.
I must say, go on, tell about the book.
So they get a book, and they're only going to do 100 of them. It will cost $1,440. I don't know if it's dollars, yeah. So you'll get 2,880 pages, and it'll be two volumes. And I'd say there's only a few people that get it, but it consists of your own images that you've taken with the app, which I thought was quite interesting, and an interesting way to sort of monetize it, I guess. And they look as if they're going to be very nice books. If you take nice photographs, so it might be interesting to see.
But isn't it McLuhan taken to its ultimate conclusion, though, John? Because this is like, you know, here are photos that you have taken of nothing, and you are going to pay $1,440 for the privilege of having something that looks pretty but contains nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, really, what is it saying about where we're going? I think McLuhan, you know, he never intended on you know, the idea of the medium is the message. He never intended on that being kind of there should be no message. You know, he intended it to say actually we should pay attention to the medium in which the message is portrayed, right? But what we're doing is taking this to its ultimate conclusion and taking the meaning out of it altogether.
Well, it's what...
Just look at the medium, it looks pretty.
It's what these people, and I guess it's an art project, are doing. And I think, you know, from that point of view, it's quite interesting.
Well, it's interesting in terms of it being a statement, I guess, of how we are using media, I guess, generally, because I guess this would be a kind of physical book, won't it?
Yeah.
Be interesting to talk to the people who choose to buy it and what their motivation would be.
Yeah.
It's a research project for somebody.
Yeah. But I can imagine a sort of slightly more social version, a more sort of crowdsourced version of this project somehow. I mean, I quite like the idea of taking a random photograph at a specific time and seeing what patterns and things you see in that, as opposed to, I guess, you know, they talk about Instagram, people presenting their life.
Mm-hmm.
And really consciously, I mean, I believe you can buy special makeup for selfies.
Can you?
Yeah. Oh no!
We must do a whole episode on that. I want to learn how to get special makeup for selfies.
I'm surprised you've not seen it, because it's fairly huge. You get makeup that makes you up to look good in a photograph.
Oh, right,
as opposed to, I mean, it makes you look pretty weird, and I think it's actually spilled over, and now people are wearing it as sort of ordinary makeup, and it's acceptable to look as if you're made up for a photograph, even though it makes you look a bit strange normally. So that's quite interesting. I mean, I noticed today I was walking through Glasgow, through one of the shopping centres, and there was a woman holding her phone up and pointing it up at the ceiling, and I immediately looked up at the ceiling to see what was interesting up there, and of course she was obviously taking a selfie and laying something up else behind her. So many people seem to be creating, you know, this sort of image of themselves. I guess we all do that, because we filter on social media, we filter what we share, But this random thing would take away from that, because you wouldn't be carefully constructing your presentation of yourself. You would be randomly constructing your presentation of yourself.
Well, except that it's anonymous to others. Therefore, it's sort of...
Yeah, I'm saying if, you know, I could see it being interesting if it extended that way, you know, and you wouldn't need,
right,
to,
okay,
you wouldn't need,
yeah,
to crowdsource it. All you would need to do is have something that would send out a message to everybody at random times, and at the point you get the message, you take a photograph, you upload it to a Flickr group, and Bob's your auntie, you've got all these sort of random things. You might try it. I'm not doing much over the summer, maybe I'll give that a shot. I just need to figure out how to get a random alert.
There are other apps that do something like what you... There is the 1 minute something that allows you to, and it's a video one, and I forget exactly the name of it, but it allows you to take just a 1 minute video over 365 days, and then it's sort of, you can pull that together. And it would be, you know, it's a 1 minute, and I think you get to choose what's your 1 minute for that day.
Hmm.
I forget the name of the app, but I thought that was it's a kind of an idea, you know, it's to sort of say which is the minute in that day that you would want to preserve in that way. And then it gives you, a bit like the book idea in the Mistaken app, it gives you, I think at the end of the year when you've got your 365, a video of all your minutes. I can't remember what it's called, but I can look it up.
So I'll be interested just in sort of tying this up a wee bit and thinking, what's this got to do with education?
Well, it has a lot to do with education, because I guess, well, it depends on how you think. If you think about the content of the apps and the photographs, taking photographs and gathering things and so on, but if you think from the perspective of how we use social media, then from that perspective, I think it has a lot to do with education. Kind of like your examples, I guess, of the spinner and the impact that has, and how we use it, and how we use X to replace Y, when actually, you know, why are people using, yeah, the phone? Why are people using the spinners in your class, right? Do I blame them because they're doing that, or because actually they're bored stupid with what I'm saying? And then, you know, that's the whole, then it does become relevant, the how it's being used. And I'd say the Binky very much shows the habitual nature of it, and how often it is those kind of unconscious habits that really are driving our behavior without our awareness. And that seems significant to me as an educator, to you know, in terms of how you use technology, how you use technology intentionally or not. And the reality is that often it's not. We don't pay attention to these things. And it does connect, I guess, to, you know, this idea of, you know, what is habit? Habit is something that we do without attention. And so much of how these apps are designed is about creating habit and not necessarily healthy habits. And that's relevant to education, I would say.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, obviously we are giving our pupils or folk that we're teaching advice on, or directing them to use some things on devices that maybe we don't really understand fully. And it's kind of good to keep at least a half eye on that. That, you know, we need to kind of be aware of the responsibility there.
But also, I mean, you know, it's that Wendy Chun, who, you know, she writes a lot about, you know, how we use the technology in habitual ways, you know, and she says that actually what is much more interesting than the leading edge of technology, what's much more interesting to her in terms of what it says about how we interact with technology and what it means to us is the obsolete, because actually what we embody is the obsolete, the stuff that actually becomes part of our everyday life in ways that we don't even think about, Like, you know, we carry the phone. You don't think about not carrying the phone. But once upon a time, it was a novelty. It was a leading edge thing. It's not anymore. Now it's gone into the realm of habit. And she says, actually, we should be studying that if we want to make sense of how technology is affecting us, rather than, you know, be blinded by the leading edge, the new thing, because actually that's the least important thing. The more important thing is the stuff that's already gone into our unconscious habit. I think that's a really interesting idea.
Yeah, it sort of speaks to the fact that there may be lots of stuff going on with that habit that you don't really fully understand, and don't understand how it's pushing one way or the other. If you're using systems, online systems or applications to learn, what else is that doing? I wonder, using even sort of drill and practice apps, what that's doing to children's sort of consciousness, mm-hmm. how it will make them approach other applications. I mean, a lot of people have designed educational games to be very sticky.
Is that a polite way of saying addictive?
Yeah, well, I think so. It's a marketing way of saying, you know, so if you're designing something to teach children something, you might, or adults even, you might want them to stick. You know, you don't want them to download a game to learn their times tables and then get bored after 2 minutes. But what does that do, the way you make that stick? Are you preparing them for another sort of app that will do the same thing? You know, do they start learning or getting used to certain amounts of stimulation or certain kinds of stimulation,
right,
and rewarded and things by it?
The habitual thing then becomes that they have to have something. So it goes to another whole big topic around, you know, advising your children to just go and get bored for a while, you know, because
yeah.
actually it can be really helpful to just sit there and be bored and understand what that might be about. And what we are teaching, of course, is the instant gratification, to the extent that actually there is no time where there is no stimulus. And I, for one, I'm a believer that, you know, that is not a good thing to be teaching our children. But that's another story.
Yeah, I think we'll save that one for another week, because we are taking a break and it is the holidays. I don't know if you have anything else. One of the things I put in the notes and I thought was useful to end-ish with is a tweet by Banksy, the graffiti artist. And it is, do more things that make you forget to check your phone. And I think that's probably good advice for the summer holidays.
Indeed. Maybe it's a lead into, when we come back in September, we talk about the steel web.
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting topic to have. We've been to have that since we started thinking about how we're going to organise these shows. They seem to have developed into one topic shows, I think. So the steel web would be a good one.
And we still can't keep to half an hour. We've got one lousy up and we still couldn't keep to half an hour. I mean, come on.
We had to start this one twice. I'm going to give us a wee buy in this. But I'm going to suggest that we do more things over the summer. Forget to check our phones. And if you're listening, thank you for listening.
Thank you, everyone.
If you've got anything you'd like us to think about or talk about, please get in touch. And also, just for now, if you're interested in joining in other Wednesday evenings with EduTalk, if you're interested in education in any way and you want to chat, get in touch and we'll have you on the more standard EduTalk shows. Well, we just hang up the phone now, and it's which phone to hang up. Haven't heard that for so long. We started with a weird modem sound. I think we're ending with an old phone. I'm not too sure why, but...
Habit.
Yeah.
Remember habit.
Right. Okay, folks. I'll just say cheerio and thanks for
listening. Cheerio, everyone.
And I'll stop the broadcast.